You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thord,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is
John Bishop.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Cleveland, Ohio, 2006. After a chance encounter, three people soon find out that life can sometimes thrust us into the public eye, even when taking great measures to avoid it. Cooper Madison was the best pitcher in baseball after being drafted number one overall in 1996 from the small Gulf Coast town of Pass Christiane, Mississippi. 1 year after announcing his sudden and shocking retirement, he finds himself seeking anonymity in Cleveland, Ohio. Kara Knox is the youngest sibling to three older brothers. After a tragic work accident to her closest relative, she has built up a tough exterior as she begins her final year of college at Cleveland State University. Jason Knox, Kara's oldest brother, is the lead detective on Cleveland's Edgewater Park killer case. After months without a suspect, he's feeling the heat from his media-hungry chief. Serendipity intervenes, and all three learn that perception and reality are paths that rarely ever intersect. Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Hey folks, you really ought to check out Patricia Gillum's Heroes of Corvus series. Book one is called A Superhero's Duty, a fight between a second-generation superhero named Red Bolt and a villain-for-hire named Icarus goes terribly wrong, resulting in the drowning deaths of three innocent civilians and orphaning a six-year-old boy. Racked with guilt, Red Bolt visits Cameron Wilson at the hospital every night and won't leave the boy's side until he falls asleep. Befriended by a night shift nurse, the man in costume begins to disclose what really happened after the fight and why he feels the death of Cameron's parents and sister fall on his actions. A superhero didn't survive that night, and Cameron and the rest of the city are not out of danger. A Superhero's Duty, Book 1 of the Heroes of Corvus by Patricia Gillum. Get this series now. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm super excited to have John Bishop, MD, on the show with me today. He has a phenomenal book. It's called Act of Murder. It's a medical thriller, and I'll tell you what, this is such a great book. I know that a lot of people are going to love this. Welcome to the show, Dr. John.
Thank you very much, Hank. Appreciate it.
I'm excited to have you. We begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Well, you may know from some of my history that I got started very late in life in this writing business, right?
Yeah, I read your bio, and you've got a fascinating story. So that would tell our listeners about it.
Okay, well, you know, basically, you know, college, went to medical school, ended up as an orthopedic surgeon down in Houston, Texas. And I guess throughout the years of going to school, you write essays, you write things about different topics. And so I always enjoyed the writing, but I never had any inclination to be a writer. I was going to be a doctor. And so as it happened, I ended up in an academic position down in Houston where I was teaching residents and fellows and medical students and carrying on a full load of practice. And I did that for about 15 years, and then I just got burned out. So I gave up the academic position, concentrated on my private practice, and lo and behold, I discovered I had something called free time, which I hadn't had any free time since I couldn't remember when. And I'd always played music, so I first started occupying some of my free time by playing the piano in a rhythm and blues band called Burt Wills and the Crying Shames. And I did that for a little while and really enjoyed it, except the traveling really got to me after a few years. And so I gave that up, not playing, just gave up playing with a band. And I had read some great book by, I'm not sure, Michael Connelly, someone that I admired as a writer. And I just sat down at the keyboard and said, I think I should write something. I'm going to call it Act of Murder. And I sat down and I just started writing. This is like in 1994. That's a long time ago. And so I wrote the book. It was pretty rough, I thought. My wife had been in the retail business most of her life, so she found me an agent in New York. And they shopped the book for a while. But, you know, I'm not sure if it was the timing or the writing or whatever it was, but it just didn't pan out. But I don't know if you heard that story. I kept writing. Not getting published didn't stop me. I just kept writing. I ended up writing 5 books between 94 and maybe 2000. And so, then after that was 5-6 years of writing, I really loved it, but it wasn't going anywhere. And so I said, well, you know, I'll go back to playing golf on the weekends. And I left it at that for many years. And interestingly enough, my son, who had always remembered when he was a little kid and I was always writing either at home or at the beach house, he said, "Hey, Dad, whatever happened to those books you used to work on?" And I said, "Well, Jim, all I've got left is a little floppy disk of the work that I did all those years, nothing on paper." I said, I went to a vendor at one of the office supply stores and asked if they could convert that floppy disk to a CD or something that I could read. And they said, "No, sir, we don't have that technology." So to make a very long story short, my son, who's a computer engineer, gave me last year for Father's Day a nice gift and opened it up, and it was Act of Murder printed out in a book form. And he had decoded this old floppy disk. And he had gone to Amazon, and however they do the deal, there was my book. And I was just floored, as you can imagine. Very proud, and it was a wonderful thing for him to do. And then he offers me the ultimate challenge. He said, "So, Dad, you think you still have the juice?"
Oh, he threw the gauntlet down on you.
He threw the gauntlet down. I said, "Well, son, I wrote 5. I think I can write another one, don't you think?" He said, "Well, be my guest. This is your challenge." Oh, wow. So I started writing again.
Oh, that is so fun. What format were those floppy disks in? Do you remember what software you were writing in at the time?
It was an old Apple, one of the early Apple computers. He called it something. I've forgotten what it was. I would take out and I think you would put the floppy in the side of the computer and then you would print it out. But it was like you said, I mean, like ancient technology. And I just can't imagine that he was able to decode that whole thing. I mean, when you put it on paper, when you first put it on paper after decoding it, there's all kinds of indentation issues and marginal issues. But, you know, the text was there.
Right. And yeah, those other things can be worked out.
I'm sorry?
Those formatting things can be worked out, but
the meat
of the text, that's the important part.
I mean, the storylines were there, and I just kind of rekindled all my interest. Thought, God, this wasn't half bad 30 years ago.
do you remember? Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I wasn't saying anything. I was just kind of filler.
Do you remember when you first started writing Act of Murder? Do you remember what the initial idea was? And did the character of Dr. Jim Bob Brady, did he come to you first? Was it a news headline maybe that got your, you know, what if juices flowing? Do you remember what the initial idea was?
Yeah, I do, and it's kind of sad. One of my partners and friends lost a child.
Oh, no.
It was one of those times where the parents were so broken up they couldn't do anything, and I remember having to handle the funeral for them and do all this kind of stuff, and it was a terrible tragedy. But that lingered in my mind, the emotional roller coaster that everybody went through during that period of time, myself included. And then I got to thinking about, well, maybe I could write about how somebody feels when they lose a child. And then the idea just developed, well, how about this character who's a doctor who kind of looks for little investigative things to do on the side because he's got a knack for it. And Jim Bob Brady just came to mind. And then I thought, well, I can't let this child die of natural causes. It has to be something traumatic that I would be involved in. So I decided this child would be run over. And then it just kind of bloomed from there. But it started out with a tragedy of beginnings for my friends.
Right. When you sat down and started kind of working through all of those feelings and emotions and all of that, did the story just open up for you? And a lot of people, when they finally find that creative avenue, they describe it like a faucet, you know, opening. It just kind of pours out. And some of us have to, kind of go at it like with a pickaxe and work the story out. How did it happen for you?
It came to me like somebody turned, like you said, somebody turned on a faucet. And I sat there and I started typing. And I probably typed 6 or 8 hours straight. And the family kept coming upstairs looking at me, seeing if I was okay, what the problem was. And I just couldn't. It was one of those things I could not stop writing. I had to stop to go to bed, and I got up in the morning. And I don't know how long it took me to write this book, but I didn't quit till I finished. And it was just the damnedest thing I've ever experienced in my life.
That I love it when that happens. You know, sometimes it feels like real work, and sometimes it's like you're watching a story and you're just reporting on what you see.
Yeah, you're like a passive observer and somebody's moving your fingers across the keyboard.
Exactly.
That's exactly how it was.
Yeah. So tell me about the character of Dr. Jim Bob Brady. Who is Dr. Brady, and what makes him such a great character?
Well, Brady had to write about something about which I knew. So I picked medicine, and I picked him as being an orthopedic surgeon, which is what I was. So I knew something about that, so I could write all kinds of little vignettes about patient encounters and surgical procedures. And, you know, you have to, I felt like you had to lace the book with a lot of reality, kind of reality TV, reality medicine, if you will.
You're right.
And so, you know, Brady he's a Texas boy, wears boots, wears scrubs in the clinic with his boots on. And he plays the piano, and, he has a kind side. He has a gruff side. He's funny, but he's compassionate. He sort of cares deeply about his patients. And, he's kind of an anti-administrator, anti-supervision sort of renegade kind of fellow, which obviously you kind of write about what you know. That must be me to some degree, you know, Hank?
Must be.
And so he's just a likable guy. I guess I made him likable in perhaps maybe all the ways I'm not likable somehow. But I made him sort of the ideal surgeon.
Right. There's a, you know, medical thrillers are a real niche, that seems to have a wide audience. There's something about these types of thrillers that appeal very broadly to people. You know, some people really like spy thrillers, and some people don't. Some people like, you know, the kind of big geopolitical, things, but some people don't. But these kinds of stories really seem to reach a wide audience. Why do you think these kinds of stories appeal so broadly?
You know, I'm not sure. It seems to me that most every TV show that's ever been about a doctor has always been popular. You know, from Ben Casey to ER to, what was the one with Dick Van Dyke? Anyway, you know that one I'm talking about. He was a doctor and did some investigative stuff on the side. And people just seem to be enamored with medicine and doctors and what are they really like. And so I think medicine appeals to, I mean, everybody's been to the doctor. Everybody's had an operation. Everybody that I've ever wanted to know who's not in the business always wants to know, like, just tell me what you did today at a dinner party. Well, I didn't think it was very exciting, but you tell the story like, wow, man, what a great day you had. I think it's just the general public just loves a good medical story.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's something that intersects every one of our lives. You know, every one of us have had, we've all encountered and interfaced with medical professionals, and we've all had someone that we looked up to as a hero in circumstances. And I think we've all kind of felt the bite of agony that comes on the other side of that a lot of times.
Yes, I think so. More than say, well, somebody said, man, I really had a great experience with this lawyer, so I want to go to law school.
Right.
Excuse the lawyer bashing.
Yeah, well, it's low hanging fruit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And remember Marcus Welby. Everybody loved Marcus Welby.
Yes, so that's right.
Everybody kind of loves a decent doctor.
Right, right. Well, as you're telling a story like this, you know, how much do you get to fudge reality? You know, how much reality can you put into a story, and still keep people hopeful? I guess you should say.
Well, how do you mean?
Like
reality, like the actual medical circumstances, or
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've tried to keep it honest and accurate in almost every way. So even technically speaking, I do a lot of research on this and that to make sure it's like I'm writing something about DNA or paternity or anything like that. I try to make it real and accurate. But of course, with every book, there's some good lying in there too. I don't think you could, otherwise it'd be nonfiction, right?
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I think you have to exaggerate and you have to sort of say things or make up things that are not exactly true. But at the same time, I think the medicine has to be accurate.
Right.
That's always been my hope, that the medicine part was real.
Right. The book takes place in 1994, and that was obviously closer to real time when you were writing it. Looking back now, will you continue writing the series in the setting that it in 1994?
Well, the first five, I guess, were all set in Houston while I was still there. Then after all this time had passed and after Jim had laying down the gauntlet, I wrote number six, retired, not living in Houston, living in Texas, but not living in Houston. It was extraordinarily difficult because the times had changed, the restaurants had changed, the buildings had changed. I'd forgotten this and forgotten that. And I really struggled with creating it in the same setting. And so I experimented then with, when I started writing number 7, moving it out of there to a different location that I was more familiar with. And that was much more comfortable. I don't know long term. I don't know what I'll do, but that's where I am. I'm moving Jim Bob Brady around.
Gotcha. what about the technologies that have changed? A lot has happened between the mid-90s and now in medical technology, in forensics, and so much stuff has advanced and changed. Is that kind of fun to look at where you were versus where we are now?
Oh, absolutely. The internet, I can remember when I first was doing research, I would have to physically go to the library, the medical library or some sort of public library to get information. And you as a writer now know, I mean, all you have to do is open up the internet, just type in one word, and you've got reams of data. So it's so much easier to have all the information at your fingertips now, but it has changed. Medicine has changed dramatically. I think the books, even though they were written then and they're set in those mid 90s, I think the information is valid, but the technology is completely different. You're right. That's hard. It's hard to make it all current.
Right. I can only imagine, especially when you're dealing with things that have to be right. You know, when you're talking about spycraft, you can just make stuff up. When you're talking about medical technology, you can't just make that up. That's that needs to be pretty spot on.
You know, and you're right. And I'll tell you what, some of my friends who read the early versions before I'm, editing all the other stuff, I said, this is not real. You got to make this real. I realized how I didn't appreciate how the reader of a medical mystery or any other mystery is really into the details. And if you don't have it right, they're not going to believe it.
Right. And that's the last thing you need is an unbelievable character when you're talking about a medical thriller.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that, I've learned a lot, man.
Yeah. how are you finding new situations to put Dr. Jim Bob Brady into? You know, that you talked about the first book, Act of Murder, and how a real life scenario kind of kicked off that creative flow. But what about now? What are you doing to find new things to put him into?
Well, back in the, I'll just kind of give you a brief little synopsis of the second book was called Act of Deception, and it's coming out in June, and it's about Dr. Brady getting sued. And he does a knee replacement on a patient, and everything seems to go fine. And then 3 or 4 months later, the patient loses his leg as an amputation.
Oh, no.
And so Dr. Brady gets sued. And, of course, that was initiated by the fact that I got sued in a similar situation where somebody did something they lied about and it didn't really happen. And so I've made up this whole story about is it an act of negligence or is it an act of deception? So that put him in the law. That put him in the law venue, and that really had to do a lot of work in the law venue because I'm no lawyer.
Right.
And then the next one called Act of Revenge. He plows into a fellow skier in Aspen, and the guy breaks his leg, and Jim Bob takes over and does all this kind of stuff for him, make sure he gets taken care of. Well, it turns out this fellow is a plastic surgeon, and he's been had his medical malpractice insurance canceled, and he threatens the owner of the insurance company on a TV interview. Then the next day, the guy's dead.
Oh, man.
So that's the situation I put him in there. He's got to find out, well, who killed this guy?
You're
it wasn't
right.
His friend, surely. Yeah. So I don't. It just I'm making up situations, but of course they're based on things that happened.
Sure. Sure. So you wrote 5 books originally, and you're releasing them now. Are you going back through Active Murder is out everywhere now, obviously, and
right.
There's links to it in the show notes where everybody can grab a copy. But the other four that are written, are you going through and editing those? And what's your process for taking those old manuscripts and updating them?
Well, that was the hardest part. Active Deception was the first one, and I had to basically go through and redo a lot of it because it was, you know, 30 years later, 20 years later. It's supposed to be in the same time frame in the book, but in reality, it's, as you know, not. And so that takes a lot of updating and a lot of editing, and that's been a challenge. I'm not sure what's going to happen. The deal I have is to release the first three, and then if they do well, then I'll have to go back and start the process editing number four and number five, and you know, go from there. So I don't know what's going to happen, Hank, but I'm ready to do the work.
when you said that your son had recovered the discs and presented you with that first book bound. Was he able to get you a disc that you can put into your modern computer and look at the manuscripts?
Yes. Yeah, he did. What he did was he converted them all to, I guess, Word or yeah, I guess they're in Word, because then what he does when I say I want to see the next book, he sends the thing to me in a packet, open it up and it's in Word. And I go through and add to it, subtract to it, edit it directly on the computer. So that makes it so much easier too that he's done that for me.
Oh, absolutely. I can only imagine. Are you thinking about new stories past these five that have been written?
Yes. I've already written two, and I'm working on the third. So, yes, I've got some different stories. Yes, I've got different stories I'm thinking about and that I've incorporated into all that. So, it's just finding new material and a new thing to write about has not been an issue yet. I'm sure I'll run into that at some point in time.
Right. Dr. Jim Bob, finds himself in lots of sticky situations. And he's, like you said, an orthopedic surgeon. So he's not what we would think of as, you know, a super detective or, you know, a superhero. He's kind of a normal guy who's, you know, happens to have a really great job. How do you balance, finding, you know, making him a character that we root for, without making him, overly powerful? How do you prevent making him, you know, more than an average guy?
Well, it's interesting. I don't really know. I think I present him as being very flawed, as a human being. Like all of us are flawed.
Sure.
And so he is not perfect, and he is by all means, he doesn't walk on air. And so, he's just a regular guy, but these situations that I put him in, he gets so involved in the situation, trying to right a wrong. And so I think the appeal for me was, in my own mind, is there's been a wrong here, and he's in position to right that wrong. And he's just a guy. He's not doesn't have superpowers, as you say. He's just a regular guy who dedicates himself to righting a wrong because he's so intent on making sure that wrong is righted. But he's no preacher.
Right. And that's the great part about it is he's an accessible character. He feels like someone that we know, you know, and I think that's what really helps connect a character to readers is if we feel like that this is someone who could, you know, have stepped out of our life.
Yes, exactly. I try to make him as normal as possible.
Right. Right. Well, when did you say the book two is coming out? In June?
June 10, book two is coming out, and September 10, book three is coming out.
I can't wait to see those books when they come out. John, this has been so much fun talking. Active Murder, a medical thriller, book one in the Doc Brady mystery series is out now. There are links to it in the show notes. John, if people want to connect with you and dig into all the stuff that you do, is there a place online where they can follow you?
Yes, there. We have a website. It's called johnbishopauthor.com.
Excellent. We'll put links to it in the show notes and send everyone to see you. Thank you so much, John, for taking time to come on the show.
Boy, thank you very much. I appreciate it very much, and thanks for the opportunity.